It's been 1 year since J.D. Salinger, one of the world's most elusive writers, died. After he had captured the world's attention with the publication in 1951 of The Catcher in the Rye, he spent most of the rest of his life trying to stay out of the public eye. A new biography by Kenneth Slowenski, founder of the website deadcaulfields.com, tries to shed some light on the myths and mysteries that surround the author. J.D. Salinger, A Life, is published by Random House. I'm very pleased that it brings Kenneth Slowenski to our show today. Hello.
Hi, Leonard. Thank you for having me.
When did you start the site?
2004.
Would you call it a fan site?
I wouldn't call it a fan site. It's a resource, Salinger resource. It's devoted mainly to his writings.
Because a fan isn't always the best person to write a biography.
Oh, so I'm hearing, yes. It is a work of appreciation, though.
Much of The Catcher in the Rye, as well as his latest stories, focus on family dynamics. How autobiographical were they?
Very, very. Except for the fact that Salinger had one sister, and he was the only son in the family. Now, if you look at Holton's family, he's one of three sons, and he has a daughter, sister Phoebe, and his Salinger's later Glass stories, there were many children.
And the father in those stories wasn't a self-made meat and cheese man either.
No, he wasn't, no. Actually, Salinger's father, who was a self-made meat and cheese man, if you want to look for his character in The Catcher in the Rye, there is a professor, Holden's history teacher, Professor Spencer, and that is Salinger's father.
Well, how much was Holden Caulfield a reflection of J.D. Salinger's youth? Hadn't he, like Caulfield, been sent to a military academy?
Yes, he was, yes. He was sent to boarding school. And but unlike Holden, who did terribly at boarding school, Salinger did well.
Why was he sent to the Valley Forge Military Academy?
Because he had flunked out of every other school.
And how did he respond to the discipline that
was
imposed?
To the regiment, he responded well. He hated it at first, of course. I mean, what could wouldn't? But actually, he needed that kind of structure.
And then he went to Columbia and
And he floundered all over again, yes.
But was he thinking about being a writer already?
He was playing with the idea, yes. He had a professor at Columbia, Whit Burnett. And Whit Burnett was sort of a legend back then. He was the editor of Story Magazine. And that was Salinger's short story professor. And he really inspired Salinger to write.
Encouraged him to publish.
Yes, he did.
Which he did in Story Magazine.
Exactly. He published his first story.
He got involved with Una O'Neill, Eugene O'Neill's daughter.
Yes.
But she was 16 at the time. Wasn't that a little inappropriate?
You know, inappropriate. Well, Salinger was 22.
Yeah, but 16 is still 2 years under legal age. Isn't there something creepy about Salinger's fixation on young women that he had throughout his lifetime?
I think it's fascinating. Una O'Neill, she hung out at the time that Salinger was dating her with Gloria Vanderbilt and Carol Marcus, who would later go on to marry Walter Matthau. And they were 16, 17 years old, and yet they were looking for husbands. It was incredible to me.
Well, he did have a romantic life with her. Una, who else? After they broke up with Una, what happened?
Well, he had a girlfriend down. He was in the service when Una broke up with him. Una moved to California. And she started to date Charlie Chaplin. That was the end of her relationship with Salinger.
We think of Salinger's entire works as being able to fit in neatly into a box set. How many books did he wind up publishing?
Four books, yes. Catcher in the Rye, three collections of short stories.
So Catcher in the Rye was his only novel?
Only novel, exactly, yes.
You would have thought after the success of Catcher in the Rye, then he would have been churning out novels.
Actually, after the success of The Catcher in the Rye, he was reticent to be churning out novels. He didn't want the limelight placed upon him.
Now, he obviously had ambitions. He published in a number of publications,
right,
but
yeah,
he wanted to be in The New Yorker because that was
the
epitome. So how do we explain this contradiction?
Salinger is nothing but contradictions. This is the fascinating part about him. What a complex individual. He starts off writing extremely ambitious. He wants to be published in The New Yorker because that's where the money is, that's where the fame is. Once he is drafted into the Army, he comes out of the Army a completely different person. He comes out sort of shaken, really shaken to the core.
But he continues to publish with the New Yorker, although there was a story that the New Yorker refused to publish.
There were several stories, yes.
So are they still unpublished works?
Yes, they are.
And there, it's assumed by many people that he continued writing after he stopped publishing.
Right. It's more than an assumption, actually. His last published work was in 1965, and it was a very long short story in the New Yorker. And he never published again after that, but he did. We know from his correspondence for decades afterwards, he still remained devoted to writing.
Do we know why the New Yorker refused to publish a couple of those stories? He was one of the bread and butter writers.
Yes, he was. Well, a lot of these stories were before he became really the premier contributor to the New Yorker. But even then, the stories that were published by the New Yorker, the New Yorker asked him to cut them down and to revise them, and he did. He was angry about it, but he did.
My guess is Kenneth Slowinski has written J.D. Salinger, A Life. It's published by Random House. He enlisted in the Army in 1943. Where did he serve during World War II?
He went overseas to Europe. He trained in England for the D-Day invasion, took part in that invasion.
He went to Utah Beach?
Yes, he did. And he served on the continent until VE Day.
Did he ever write about that experience?
He did. He has an unpublished story that does depict warfare.
Now, on page 94 of your book, you admit that Salinger's whereabouts during the battles are uncertain.
Right.
But couldn't you have found and interviewed any of the soldiers who'd served with him to find out where he had been?
The reason I write that is because Salinger was in the Counterintelligence Corps, and a lot of his whereabouts are unknown because they're still top secret.
Mm-hmm. There has been a bit of controversy as to why, when the British edition of this book was published, it was claimed that you did 60 interviews, and here you just list three.
Right.
And when Diane Rehm asked you on her show on January 26th to identify the names of the individuals you'd interviewed, you declined. She said, how do you know that? And you say, that's my supposition.
I don't recall the question that goes to.
Well, that's from an air check.
What I did, this is a work of appreciation. It's not a work of espionage.
But a biography is usually a work of serious research in which we go to find out what actually happened.
I poured over hundreds of Salinger letters. In a way, I really interviewed J.D. Salinger.
You interviewed him by looking at his letters. Are these letters that are accessible to us all?
Yes.
Because so many things are not accessible anymore. Could this book have been published at an earlier time?
Yes. I wrote it before his death. 95% of it.
Did he start writing Catcher in the Rye while he was in Europe, while he was in the military?
He started writing Catcher in the Rye about 1940. He had the idea. 1941, he was producing works.
So he was thinking about it during the war.
Yes, he was.
Do we see any reflection of his experience in World War II in the character of Holden Caulfield?
I believe we do, yes. If you look at Holden's character, you can see that he's searching for a place in a world where he's not sure he quite belongs, the adult world. And that's very similar to a soldier who comes back from Europe after witnessing warfare. And he's not sure whether he belongs in a civilian world because his values have shifted and changed.
So he stays in Europe for a while.
Yes.
Meets Ernest Hemingway and his first wife.
Right.
That marriage failed. Why?
Well, I think it was an impetuous marriage to begin with. I think in a way that Salinger, he was missing home. He had been away from home for 3 years already, and he married Sylvia, I think to replicate the life he would have had he returned to the United States.
And then she came here and
she did, yes.
And the marriage broke up.
For some reason, he brought her back home to New York, thinking that she was going to be able to live with his mother and father, and of course that didn't happen.
Well, there was a large emigre population in Paris, especially after the war. Do you think he could have survived in that environment?
Living in Paris?
Yeah, or some other part of Europe. But I guess Paris is where most of the ex-GIs were hanging out.
Well, he would have enjoyed Paris. I mean, his time in Paris, during the liberation of Paris, probably the most euphoric time he spent during the war. But he really wanted to come home to New York.
When The Catcher in the Rye was published in 1951, was it an immediate success?
It was a success, yes. It hit number 4 spot on the bestseller list.
What about the critics?
The critics were very kind to it, frankly. There were some who, of course, you know, because of the language and you know, Holden visiting prostitutes, et cetera, that they condemned it for that reason. But then, for the most part, it was very well received.
Well, it's still read in high school English classes where there aren't complaints about the language in some of the situations. But John Guare in Six Degrees of Separation wrote, "The Catcher in the Rye should be read by everyone but adolescent boys."
Well, in a way, you know, I don't really agree with that. But in a way, I think the point he's making is that it is a very adult novel.
So what changed his view of celebrity? Why do you think after having all of that work published in The New Yorker and his desire for fame, that he suddenly became so reclusive?
Well, that's really what the book is all about, because this was a slow progression. The book tries to answer the question of, or show the reader, the reasons why Salinger did stop publishing and fall silent.
Well, there are all sorts of theories. Zen Buddhism.
That's part of it, yes.
Dianetics. Mm. His study of the teachings of Edgar Cayce.
Actually, it's a Vedic Hinduism more than anything else.
Zen Buddhism doesn't say you shouldn't publish books but and have fame.
Salinger, he subscribed to a philosophy that demanded ego detachment. So anything publicity-wise or publishing, for the most part, seemed phony to him.
There were rumors that Salinger lived in a cabin eating only canned peas.
Isn't that weird? Yeah, we know better than that. Actually, as people are considering it, that he was living in some shack in a field of rye, he was actually at church dinners having roast beef.
With Claire Douglas?
With Claire Douglas.
His second wife.
His second wife and Colleen O'Neill, his third wife.
Claire was not happy with that marriage.
Well, Salinger became a workaholic. He was producing his Glass stories during the time that he was married to Claire. And he actually built a bunker apart from the house and the family, and he would spend 12, 16 hours a day there. And so that had a strain on the marriage.
Did Salinger react when his daughter, Margaret Salinger, published her memoir, Dreamcatcher, in 2000?
We have no idea how he reacted.
Mm-hmm. Well, we do know he continued writing for a while. So even though he was reclusive, he was publishing Franny and Zooey and Raise High, the Roof Beam Carpenters.
He might have been writing until the very end.
But not sending him into The New Yorker or anywhere else?
No, not publishing. No, not at all.
The last of his stories was published was Hapworth 16, 1924.
Right. In 1965, yes. And that received the most tepid of reviews.
Do you think that's a reason he stopped?
No, it's not, because it's long been assumed that that could have been one of the reasons. But he did sign a book deal with Little Brown & Company a year later, in 1966, and he accepted an advance toward his next book.
Well, he had an affair with an 18-year-old, Joyce Maynard, and people went after her when she revealed it rather than being critical of him. I guess the fans of J.D. Salinger are so protective of him. They attacked him. You're receiving a certain amount of heat for some of the things that happened in the publication of this book. I don't know if we'll ever resolve the problems of J.D. Salinger, but mm-hmm. Kenneth Slowinski will be in conversation with Sybil Steinberg on Sunday, February 13th at 2 p.m. at the Westport Public Library. That's at 20 Jessup Road in Westport. For more information, go to our show page at WNYC.org.